You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend. And joining us today is Angelica Simpson. Angelica is the foster adoption recruiter for Child Protective Services. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what CPS does and also what you need to know about foster care or adoption. Angela, thanks you so much for being with us here today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Now, is it okay if we call you Angie, or what do you prefer?
Yes, Angie's fine.
Okay. So, Angie, first of all, tell us a little bit about CPS, Child Protective Services. What is that? I know it's very wide. You cover a lot of areas. But if you wouldn't mind, if someone's listening at home and said, what is Child Protective Services all about?
So what Child Protective Services does is we investigate reports of abuse or neglect of children across the state of Texas. We have a centralized number, a 1-800-252-5400. For anybody that is going to report any concerns of child abuse or neglect, that's the number that they call. Then we go out and investigate the concerns, see if it has merit. If so, then we try to work services with the family, see if we can try to get the family to mitigate the concerns of abuse or neglect, get them in therapy, substance abuse treatment, different things like that we can try to work through the concerns that we have with them. If there's still too many concerns and services aren't working or it's not appropriate for the family, then we look at having to take custody of the children. And when we take custody of the children, we look for is, are there relatives that we can place the children with, a close family friend, or foster homes. And so that's where we look at the need of foster homes for our children throughout the state.
Now, as far as the services available, are there certain things that you look at as a caseworker? I'm thinking about, does a child's behavior change at school? Or what are some of the things that you look for to see if there is neglect or abuse going on at home? And because sometimes the child's not going to say anything because they're afraid.
Right. A lot of times it's going to be those changes in behavior. So you'll see maybe children starting to isolate themselves, or they're acting out, becoming aggressive. With neglect cases, you're going to see maybe they're starting to hoard food or they're constantly hungry. You're going to see them losing weight. Concerns of physical abuse, maybe they're wearing long sleeves or wanting to cover up the bruises. Sometimes the explanation that the child will have for the bruise doesn't make sense. And so you're looking at, okay, could that really have happened based off of what the child is telling me? So if it's a story that just doesn't add up as to how this bruise could have gotten there, then definitely that's a red flag for abuse or neglect.
And unfortunately, sometimes we've all seen movies or television shows where what you just described happens. And sometimes we say to ourselves, well, that only happens. That's Hollywood. Nobody could actually hurt a child that much. And we wish that were true, but it's not.
Right. It's shocking. And it's typically going to be a loved one. When children are abused or neglected or even sexually abused, it's typically someone they know and trust. And so being able to think that, could that really happen? Yes, it does. It happens, and it happens a lot. And we need to be that voice for the children to be able to call the 800 number, call the police, talk to the teacher, let them know the concern so that we can get involved and help these children be safe.
And so based on that and what you just told me, what does foster adoption fall into, and what are some of the things that you're looking at doing?
So with fostering our children, we do, once we get custody of the children, we do give the parents a year to a year and a half to complete services under the court. So we are trying to ultimately, if it's safe, to return these children back to their biological parents, because ultimately if they're returning to a safe environment, it's in their best interest to be with their biological family. So when you're fostering, you're looking at taking care of this child as if they were your own, but you just don't have the legal parental authority given to you by the court. So you're still going to be taking these children to and from visits with their parents, taking them to and from school, getting them in extracurricular activities, taking them to their doctor's appointments, therapy sessions, having appointments with their attorneys. So that's what fostering is going to entail. if at the end of the 12 to the 18 months, and sometimes before, if the parent just isn't cooperating with the department, once parental rights are terminated or if the parents relinquish their rights, then the child is available for adoption. And so at that point, if you've been fostering this child or children, you are looked at to say, hey, do you want to adopt these children? They're available. Then they can move forward with adopting.
As far as first, let's look at foster parents and foster care. When you hire somebody or get somebody to be a foster family or a foster parent, what are some of the prerequisites that you're looking for?
So you have to be at least 21 years old. Your marital status does not come into play. What we're looking at is that you are financially and emotionally stable to take on this task. So then we will do a background check on you, your spouse, if you have one, and anybody over the age of 14 living in your home. They'll do a fingerprint check, a check here for CPS history, and also for any criminal history in the state of Texas. If you lived in any other states in the past 5 years, then we'll also look at getting any CPS history from those other states. Then you'll complete an 11-week training. It's one night a week, so we do ours on every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. At the end of the 11 weeks, we have also what's called a home study where someone will go out to your home. It's a very extensive and very invasive interview for you, your spouse, and anyone living in your home. We want to know everything we can about you. We want to know how you were raised, how you were disciplined. What's your relationship like with your parents and your siblings? What's your relationship like with your spouse? Have you had any previous marriages or longstanding relationships, and what happened there? We're looking at any loss that they've experienced, how they dealt with any loss or how they dealt with any trauma that they've experienced. So it's very in-depth, and we want to know as much as we can so that, one, we can make sure that they're in a good space to take on the task of caring for the children in our care, but we also want to make sure that we're making good matches so we can see what their strengths and weaknesses are. And when we're looking at placing children, then we can see, okay, this children has these needs. They would go really good with this family because this family has these amazing strengths in that area. So we're looking at being able to do those good matches because we don't want children to have to move from home to home. The average placements that a child goes through while they're in care at this time is about 4 to 5 placements. So we want to be able to place them in one foster home and let that be their only placement until they're either reunified with their biological family or they're available for adoption.
When the child is placed in a foster home or children, what about siblings? If you have a situation where there are 3 siblings and there is a problem at home and they need to be placed in foster care, will they be placed in the same home?
We are always trying to place siblings together. It's in their best interest to be able to remain in their sibling group. It is hard to find placements that are able to accept 3-4 children together in the home. But that's something we're definitely always striving to do. So if we can't, then we ultimately end up separating them, which is the unfortunate part, that we don't have enough homes with enough space to accept sibling groups. So we have that hard task of separating them. We do maintain the sibling contact, so the siblings will have regular visits, phone calls with each other. We are mandated to do that, and it is in their best interest to maintain that contact. So if we do split them up, then also foster parents knowing, okay, we're going to have to maintain that contact. But ultimately, we're striving to get them adopted and adopted together.
Because of smartphones and the availability of the technology now, is it difficult to keep track of the children? And perhaps they're told not to have any contact with their biological parents for a certain period of time. But because as I just mentioned, smartphones, mm-hmm. you can reach out and call somebody.
Right. And so it's very easy with technology, I think, to maintain those contacts. There's FaceTime, there's Skype, there's video calling. There's so many ways that children can maintain contact with each other. And you'll see that even with biological parents. So sometimes there might be a restriction that they're not allowed to have contact with bio parents for whatever reason. The typical is that they are going to have contact with their parents. And maybe it's going to be supervised phone calls or supervised video calls. But then the older the child gets, they're going to figure out how they can communicate with the people they want to communicate if they really want to. So being vigilant of that, but being also aware that it's going to happen.
We're visiting with Angelica Simpson. She is with Child Protective Services, and she's a recruiter for the Foster Adoption Program. What you just said about children, a child's age, once they're older, teenager, they pretty much kind of have a mind of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So my question would be, if you have a situation where, let's say, a child is maybe 7 years old, but then they have another sibling who is 17, 16, does that change anything as far as trying to maintain the diplomacy there that is needed, because the older child is going to have a mind of his or her own,
mm-hmm.
and the little guy is going to be saying, well, you know what, this is what my big brother said we should do.
Right. And so when you're looking at those sibling relationships, you, of course, want to try to model the desired behavior that you want to see in your children, but it's also accepting that the children have a past, and we might explain to you what we know about what they've experienced, what abuse or trauma that they've gone through. But there are certain things that if the child doesn't disclose it or it hasn't been addressed with us, we may not know everything that they've been through. And so being able to have that mindset of, gosh, they've probably been through a lot, and these traumas that they've experienced is going to be the reasons why their children are acting the way they're acting or behaving in certain ways that maybe we might see as unacceptable, but those behaviors have gotten them through the trauma and all of the things that they've experienced. These behaviors have served a purpose for them. So being able to acknowledge that and have that understanding of looking at the reasons why children are behaving the way they're behaving, and then looking at, okay, how am I going to model the way that that we should behave in society, and how are we going to model what we want to see or the changes that we would like to see in these children that have experienced things that we maybe never could have even imagined. So being able to have that mindset and just that understanding of trauma and what that can do to a person, and displaying proper boundaries of what you're going to want to see. So if you're having this 16-year-old that's having these terrible behaviors that you don't want the 7-year-old to display, then, okay, what are the limits that we're going to put around the contact that we're going to allow or what we're going to expose the 7-year-old to as far as what the 16-year-old is displaying? So you do have that leeway of deciding, this is how I want to parent, and this is something that I cannot allow this child to be exposed to, but of course we are going to promote, and it's required to maintain that sibling contact. So the extent of how is this contact going to take place, that's something that will work out. They do have to have a face-to-face contact once a week. So maybe we're going to go to the park, or we're going to go out to eat. So something neutral where you're not necessarily allowing access to a lot of negative behaviors, but still allowing that contact.
As far as foster care here in the El Paso region, how do we compare to the rest of the state, or for that matter, even the rest of the country, as far as having foster care available?
In El Paso, we're a very unique region in that we typically have a higher ability to place children with relatives. However, recently we have seen that declining. We're trying to figure out what's going on, that children aren't able to go with relatives as they used to. We definitely always have a need for homes. We have homes. They have a child that they're fostering, and then that child becomes available for adoption. They adopt the child, so that foster home typically closes. So we're always constantly needing more and more homes. We have about 230 children that are in foster care at this moment in our region, in this El Paso region. Most of those children do have homes, but then we do have some children that are placed in emergency shelters, or that we might have to look at sending out of the city because we don't have placement for them here. So we're definitely always trying to keep our children in El Paso around at least their familiar surroundings and in placements here.
From what you just said earlier about background checks and all that, and if you find something bad there, of course you would disqualify that person or persons, mm-hmm. as foster parents. But what about if someone out there is listening and they would might be interested in being a foster parent. However, they're single, not married. And so, you know, some people might say, well, that's a strike against them because they've never had children or they don't have another mate to help them out.
And no, absolutely not. We do have several people that are either fostering currently or going through the process to get licensed to foster that are single. And that is perfectly fine. As long as you're financially stable, that's what we're really looking at. We have a lot of single individuals applying for foster care licensing. We also have a lot of members of the LGBTQ community that are going through the process of getting licensed to foster or adopt. So we're definitely open to those communities.
So we've been talking about foster care and foster parents, but as you mentioned, after 8 to 10 months or maybe even a year, if the child is ready to be adopted by somebody else, what about being an adoptive parent? Does that change at all from foster to adoption parents as far as qualifying and getting licensed?
It's the exact same process if you want to get licensed to foster or adopt. You'll go through the same background checks, the same licensing process as far as the training requirements and everything like that is exactly the same. What we typically try to encourage as far as our licensing is to get licensed, a dual license to foster and adopt. That way, if you do have these children in your care that become available for adoption, you already have that license to be able to adopt them. You can also choose to just get licensed to foster or just get licensed to adopt. So you do have that flexibility of choosing. When we do have children that are available, this isn't something we force on a home, say, hey, you have the space, you're going to take these kids, where we are going to have a conversation with them as far as saying, this is what happened. This is what we know about the child. These are the behaviors that we know about the child, and having a conversation with that foster home. Are you willing to accept this child or these children? So this is a choice that the foster parents have. It's not something that we're going to force upon them. So knowing that coming into it, that you're going to have that opportunity to decide, can I handle these behaviors that this child is exhibiting? Is this for me? Can I really do it? And then if not, and saying, no, it's okay. We don't want to put a child into a home that is just going to break down because, you know, it's not working out for whatever reason. We do want them, the foster parents or adoptive parents, to make a very cognizant decision about, Can I do this? Can I take this child on?
We are visiting with Angela Simpson. She is with Child Protective Services, and she is a recruiter for the Foster and Adoption Program. So, Angie, take us through the adoption process.
So the adoption process, what happens when a child becomes what we call legally free? That means parental rights have been terminated or the parents relinquish their parental rights. At the moment that parental rights are terminated, there is still a 90-day window that the parents or family members can appeal the court decision. So we do wait those 90 days before we can say, yes, you can go ahead and adopt this child. However, the child does have to be in your home for 6 months before we can legalize adoption. So if you've been fostering this child for the 12 months and then they become available for adoption, you've already met that time requirement. But if you're licensed to only adopt, the child has to be in your home for those 6 months before you can adopt. But we still have to wait those 90 days after parental rights have been terminated.
Are there certain children, not because of behavior, but because perhaps of age, who are hard to place?
We do. We do have a much harder time placing our older children. I think there's the kind of misconception that if they're older, they're going to have bad behaviors and we can't really, quote unquote, train them to be the child that we want them to be. And a lot of our older children, they still need loving homes. They still need a lot of patience and guidance and nurturance. And we do struggle to place them, I think, because of that notion that the community has that they're going to be harder to manage. And that's not always the case. So opening up their hearts and minds to accepting these older children or maybe even, you know, these younger children, but they have these older siblings and seeing, can I accept all of them? Because ultimately they're going to thrive a lot better if they're all together and we still need to look at these older kids that need homes. We have currently 723 children, that's children from the ages of 0 to 17, that have absolutely no goal of a permanent home at this time. So that's 723 children across the state of Texas where they don't have a plan of being adopted or a place they can call home. So that means these children, when they turn 18, they don't have anywhere to go for the holidays. They don't have someone to look through for guidance when they're in college or they're having a rough time as an adult. Because when we turn 18, I mean, who's really ready to be independent? We all still need someone to be able to fall back on or someone to call when something happens. So these children are aging out of our care and have nowhere to go. And so we definitely need to look at these kids still need us and they still need a place to call home.
Angie, does gender or ethnicity play a role in this as well?
Yes, we also have, it's harder to place males than females. I think that's also with the stigma that, you know, boys have harder behaviors than girls do. So it's that difficulty of placing boys as well. Across the state of Texas, of course, we do have a disproportionality of African Americans and minorities in care to where they're a smaller part of our population in general, but they show a higher percentage of the children in our care. So we do have African Americans and minorities a more difficult time placing them in foster homes, and they're also more likely to age out of care. So they'll more likely be 18 and have nowhere to go.
Do you have an issue or is there a problem with what some might consider mixing up ethnicities? Perhaps you have African-American children, and they're going to Mexican-American family, or Mexican children going to an African-American parent. You know, I've known persons who are white, and they've adopted African-American children, and everything seems to be okay.
Right.
However, I'm sure that there are exceptions, and there are different things that you all have to follow to make sure that it works.
Yeah, so we definitely do try to place African-American children or minorities in homes of the same ethnicity or background. However, of course, we don't have enough homes to do that. So what we're asking is just being open to accepting children of a different culture and then learning, okay, what can I do to still encourage this child to experience their culture or have those roots of their ethnicity or their background? So getting educated on their cultural background, also considering where do they like to go to church? What religion are they? What are things that they do for holidays, their routines and their beliefs? So being open to accepting that this child might have different cultural beliefs than you and being willing to allow this child to express that. So it may mean, okay, do we open gifts at midnight on Christmas? Or do we wait until, you know, Christmas morning? So figuring out what you can do to help keep that normalcy for those children.
Angie, one of the things that we haven't discussed is, okay, what about a baby?
Mm-hmm.
And if they go up for adoption, how does that work? And we've heard of stories where perhaps a teen mom doesn't feel like she can take care of that child, so they put them up for adoption.
Right. And I think that's the common thing. Everybody wants a baby. So it's hard to say if you're wanting to adopt only that you're going to get a baby, because remembering we're still working with the biological parents for a year to a year and a half. So if you're wanting to adopt a baby, we recommend highly that you foster to adopt, because we might be able to have a baby in our care from the moment they're born, but they're going to go into a foster home while we're working with the biological parents. And ultimately, if that child becomes available for adoption about 1.5, 2 years old, this foster family that's had them is typically going to want to adopt the baby. So if that's the age group that you're looking for, then it's definitely considering, okay, I need to foster.
And I guess that's one of the things that also people take into account. If you're fostering and it is a baby, you get attached to that child.
Right.
And so it's hard to give them up.
Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly understandable. That's something that we do talk to them about in the training is how to work through that loss, because it is a loss as well. You're developing that attachment with these kids, which is what we want, and it's good for the kids to have that attachment. But then also realizing there's a possibility that this child is going to go back home, and trying to keep yourself in that mindset of that possibility happening, so that if it does happen, you're kind of more prepared to cope with it. We'll talk with the homes and the foster parents to say, do you need a break after fostering this child if they went back home, to work on yourself or see if this is still for you? And, of course, we're still here if they're wanting to continue fostering to reach that goal of ultimately adopting. We do have a lot of parents that are working through that. We're trying to work through also getting support groups for parents on working through these losses or through children being returned home. So we're trying to work on that so that foster parents have a place to go.
And as far as we discussed already, if it's a teen mom and she gives up the baby, are there certain rules that apply to the adoption, perhaps where, say, the biological mom can't see this baby until they're 18 or until they're 15?
Our adoptions are closed adoptions. So once that adoption is legal, then the biological parent does not have any legal rights to see this child. However, we do encourage also in the fostering process for foster parents to develop, as far as they're comfortable, develop some type of relationship with the biological parents. Biological parents have typically been abused or neglected themselves, and this is all that they know how to do and how to parent. That's what they learned. And often they can learn from the foster parents about how to, you know, appropriately engage with the child, how to let go of some of their behaviors that they've been holding on to. So it's definitely something that the foster parents can help the biological parents with. And also if foster kids if the kids are returned to biological parents and you've had that relationship and built that with the biological parents, they might say later down the road, something happened, they relapsed or something goes on. We've had situations where they call the foster parents and say, hey, you know what, this happened, can you come pick up the kids? And so building that relationship will also help. If in the future something happens, this parent feels like they can go to you.
Tell us, our listeners out there, and they're interested, what do they need to do?
So we have informational meetings every second Wednesday and last Monday of the month at our office at 501 Hawkins, which is at Hawkins and North Loop. And the informational meeting starts at 6 p.m. This month, just because of the holiday, we are having the last informational meeting the week before the last Monday of the month. So they can come to those meetings for more information. We'll give them an application if they're ready to go forward with the process. And then we just start from there. We do the initial background checks. If those initial background checks are cleared, then we invite them to the foster adoption classes.
Do you all have a web page or
we
Facebook
do.
Page?
We do have a website. It's the Texas Adoption Resource Exchange. There you can see some of the children that we have available for adoption throughout the state, or you can look at just our region. And also has the information about our meetings. So you can go to that website and get those information.
And can you give us a quick phone number, Angela?
Yes, my phone number. Also, you can contact me directly. It's 915-538-9725. You can also email me at angelica.simpson@dfps.state.tx.us.
Angie, thank you so much for being with
thank
us here
you
today.
So much for having me.
We've been visiting with Angelica Simpson. She is with Child Protective Services. She's a recruiter for the foster adoption chapter of the CPS here in El Paso. Again, if you need additional information, you can call 915-538-9725. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Gerardo Moreno. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.